Narayanam namaskritya naram ceva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. Is this on? Let me turn it up a little bit. Canto 1, Chapter 7, Chapter entitled The Son of Drona Punished. Text number 17 and 18. Iti priyam vaugu vichitra jalpai.
Iti priyam vaugu vichitra jalpai.
Sasant. It's a little bit loud, Bhakti. Sasantra ye twa chuta mitra sutta.
Sasantra ye twa chuta mitra sutta.
Anvadravadam shita ugradanva.
Anvadravadam shita ugradanva.
Kapidvajo guru putram ratena.
Kapidvajo guru putram ratena.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Priyam
unto the dear. Vaugu, sweet. Vichitra, variegated. Jalpai, by statements. Saha, he. Santwa yitwa, satisfying. Achyuchanmitra Sutta. Arjuna, who is guided by the infallible Lord,
as a friend and driver.
Anvadravat,
followed.
Dhamshita, being protected by Kavacha. Ugradanva, equipped with furious weapons. Kapidvaja, Arjuna.
Guru Putram,
the son of the martial teacher.
Ratena,
getting on the chariot. Translation and purport by this by Srila Prabhupada. Arjuna, who is guided by the infallible Lord as friend and driver, thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements. When he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons, and getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Ashwatthama, the son of his martial teacher. Text 18. Ashwatthama, the murderer of the princes, seeing from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, fled in his chariot, panic-stricken, just to save his life, as Brahma fled in fear of Shiva. Purport. According to the reading matter, either ka or arka, there are two references in the Puranas. Ka means Brahma, who once became allured by his daughter and began to follow her, which infuriated Shiva, who attacked Brahma with his trident. Brahmaji fled in fear of his life. As far as arka is concerned, there is reference in the Vamana Purana. There was a demon by the name Vijumali who was gifted with a glowing golden aeroplane which travelled to the back of the sun, and night disappeared because of the glowing effulgence of this plane. Thus the sun god became angry, and with his virulent rays he melted the plane. This enraged Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva then attacked the sun god, who fled away and at last fell down at Kashi, Varanasi, and the place became famous as Lulaka.
Omagyan Tivanandishya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaya Dadati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kaupat Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Petitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Hare Hare. So it's an interesting pastime because if you look at the Bhagavatam, this is actually the first time that Krishna personally appears in Srimad Bhagavatam. The entire Bhagavatam is meant to describe the glories of Krishna, as we've stated many times in our classes, that ete chamsa kala pumsa krishnas tu bhagavan swayam. The Bhagavatam, its primary purpose is to glorify Krishna, and that's what it does. It is a scripture about Krishna. There are 18,000 verses, and there are 330 chapters. And the 10th canto is 90 chapters, and the 11th canto is voluminous, and that's Krishna speaking to Uddhava. And the beginning of the third canto, there's four chapters, just a summary of Krishna's pastimes. And then in this first canto, you see Krishna appears now, and there's about four or five chapters where directly Krishna is involved. So if you look at the Bhagavatam as a whole, most of the Bhagavatam is actually fully dedicated to Krishna personally. So this is the first time in the Bhagavatam where he appears himself in his original form, not the original form, because it's not Vrindavan, but in the form of Krishna as the chariot driver of Arjuna. This is the first time that he appears, and it's a very intense pastime because Ashwatthama has just killed the five sons of Draupadi, which is, you know, I mean, devotees complain about the smallest things. You know, we complain about everything practically. Because Kali Yuga is, what is the definition of Kali Yuga? People are short-lived, quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, right? And above all, always disturbed. So devotees complain about everything practically. You know, this and that and this and that, and never satisfied and always. But actually, you should have a reality check. And you should understand that we actually have nothing to complain about, because if you look at the Mahabharata and you look at Arjuna and Draupadi, what they had to do, none of us will ever, ever have to do. Right? None of us will ever have to do anything remotely difficult compared to what they did. You know, no one will ever lose five children. Right? We pray that we never lose one child. How difficult that would be. How psychologically disturbing that would be. What to speak of five of your children being killed, murdered, like that. So there's nothing to complain about. We don't have anything to complain about. Yet, we have to complain about every single thing. Right? We're so intolerant and so selfish and self-centered that we become disturbed about everything in Kali Yuga. It's not just us, it's everyone in the material world. You know, probably the devotees are better and we probably complain less. But you see, devotees, they get disturbed about so many petty things. Devotees, they come to, the junior devotees come to the senior devotees for counseling all the time. And they come for the most petty, ridiculous reasons. Oh, Prabhu, this is happening. And oh, Prabhu, that is happening. And oh, Mataji, that is happening. And half the time we just have to say to the devotees, just get a reality check. Just grow up a little bit and stop being so self-centered and so selfish. All your problems are actually minuscule. Just like His Holiness Indrajumna Swami, he was writing in one of his diaries that he was, I think it's about 5 years ago, he went for a doctor's appointment in South Africa and had a checkup, and they found one mark on his back, and then the doctor went out to get another doctor and asked him to come in to also examine, and then they went into the next room, they were whispering, and they said the word melanoma, which means skin cancer, which is what Bhakti Tirtha Swami, that was what began his the end of his life. So Indrajumna Swami said that immediately he went into a cold sweat, right? Immediately. And he said that everything in his life, all the small problems that are in our brain all day while we're chanting our rounds, all of these little problems that we have, they all just suddenly disappeared. What was the problem? Now he's going to die of cancer, so what's the problem? So then, he said he didn't sleep properly because it was 3 or 4 days until the doctor's report came back, so he couldn't sleep properly. He wrote a letter to the GBC begging their permission that he could go to Vrindavan and become a Babaji and just chant Hare Krishna for the remaining days of his life. And then the doctor's report came back and said that actually it's not melanoma. It's just a irregular mark on the skin, so you're not going to die. But then Maharaj said he got a lot of realizations, right? Because this is the way we are every day. Every day we have all these problems which are in our mind, all these things which we take so seriously, right? Such huge problems. But if you take it into reality, into perspective, it's nothing significant. How long is our life anyway? Compared to the life of Lord Brahma, how long is our life? 1 year on earth is equal to Brahma's... How long is that for Brahma? 1 year. This year, in 2012, how long is that in Brahma's life? 1 moment. I remember in the pastime, Brahma Bimohan Leela, right? Came and got all the calves and their cows, put them in the cave, right? Turned back, 1 year passed. Right? And then he's, what's going on? Go back, they're still there. What's going on? So he's just going like this, right? And that's 1 year, like that. So put it in perspective. Right? You think, oh, so many problems I had. But compared to Lord Brahma's life and what's going on in other places in the universe and in the entire creation, right? Your little problems, they don't mean anything. Who was that? Was it Revata? One king, he went to visit Brahma. I think it was King Revata. I can't remember the exact person who it was. He went to visit Lord Brahma. So he got to Brahma Loka and he said to the gatekeepers, he said, I would like to have darshan with Brahmaji. And they said, please just wait a few minutes. He's just watching one musical and dance performance by the Gandharvas. It will be finished in a few moments. When he's finished, he will greet you. So a few moments passed, the performance finished, they left. They called him in to see Brahmaji. And he said, Brahmaji, I would like to have a suitable husband for my daughter down there on earth. And Brahma smiled. And he says, don't you understand? He said, since you've been here waiting for the last few moments, he said, yugas have passed. Your daughter's not there anymore. Your family's not there anymore. Right? Your dynasty is not there anymore. Right? It's all disappeared now. Right? So then he came back down to earth. He saw everything was completely gone. So we have to put things in perspective. At least some perspective. You know. There's how many universes in Mahavishnu's paws? How many universes come out of the paws of Mahavishnu? So many. Right, hundreds, thousands of universes coming out of the pores. And which universe are we in? We're in the last one that comes out. Right, so that makes us feel pretty special, right? We always like to be something. Okay, if we're not the biggest one, at least we're the smallest one. like that. At least we can be proud of something, right? So we're the last one to come out. And because ours is the smallest universe, Brahma only has Chaturmukha, four faces. Right? But on the when Brahma went to visit Krishna that time in Dwarka, and they said, Who are you? He said, I am Brahma. They said, just wait one moment, we'll tell Krishna that you've come. So they went to see Krishna, and they said, Brahma has come to see you. And Krishna said, which one? And they went back, and they said to Brahma, which one? And he said, what do you mean? Which one? Huh? And they said, Chaturmukha, four-headed, Brahma. So they went back, and they said, bring him in. So he came in, and he said, my lord, he said, why did you ask? Which one? And then Krishna, he summoned all of them, come. So they all came. Because Dwarka is in every universe in the material world. So in each universe he called Brahma and then Brahma walked in. So one had 10 heads, one had 100 heads, one had 1,000 heads, one had 10,000 heads. And then they all offered obeisances to Krishna simultaneously. And when the metal on their helmets touched the ground, it was like thunderous. And then Brahma understood. He just shrunk back into perspective. I am not anyone significant anymore. So, we should put things into perspective. Part of studying the Bhagavatam, it is called Swajaya. Swajaya means... self-study. Swa. Swaha. When you offer oblations, you do the jagya, the fire jagyas, we say Swaha. Swaha. Swa. Swa means my own. Swa means ourself, my own. What are we offering into the oblation? What are you offering? When you offer, you put some ghee or you put some grains into the fire. What are you putting in? Swaha. Right? You're actually offering yourself. Right? Your heart. You're actually offering that to Krishna. Just like when you offer the bhoga, just like Nanda, what did you just offer to the deities? What did you just offer? Huh? Oh, it's already offered, right? It's prasad now. You don't have to. It's not a secret, right? But we know what's there, right? Every morning, Krishna has puri, pakora, sabji, halava, right? This is his morning offering. He has this for breakfast. This is his breakfast. Only Krishna can eat like this every day. I used to eat like that. First 8 years when I was a brahmachari, I used to eat like that. Krishna would eat and then I would eat his remnants. But now I don't eat his remnants, all of his remnants. I just have a little tulsi leaf or something like that. Because the difference between the material body and the spiritual body. That's one of the great advantages of going back to Goloka Vrindavan. The body can digest anything. Just like sometimes in the pastimes of Krishna, then Madhu Mangala, he eats 1,000,000 laddus. At once. Right? Just sits there, eats 1,000,000 laddus, right? And then just gets up and keeps going like that. So there are great advantages. But Nanda has just done the offering. He's just offered the bhog. But what are we actually offering? We're offering our heart to Krishna. It is at the feeling. Are you listening to this, Nanda? What are you actually offering to the offering to the deity? You're offering your heart. Because who cooked the offering? Who was the cook? Aditi. Okay, so Aditi, she's cooking. But Krishna is not as concerned about what is on the offering plate as he is concerned with the bhakti. Patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam, yome bhakcha prayachchahati. Krishna says, right, it is the bhakti, ashnami, Krishna says. I relish that bhakti. I relish the what is in the heart. I relish the feeling that you put into the offering more than the offering itself. We know that pastime of Duryodhana and Vidura. The Duryodhana offered a huge feast for Krishna's pleasure. But Krishna rejected the feast. He said, I won't even eat the feast, Duryodhana, because there's no love. You know, I can eat all the food, but there's no love, so where's my satisfaction? And then he went to Vidura's house, and Vidura offered him banana peel, And then he ate it. And then by the time Vidura worked out what he was doing, that he was offering banana peel, he said to Krishna, "I'm so sorry, I'm offering you banana peel." Krishna said, "No, I'm relishing that. Because it's the love which is the most important element in the offering." So swaha, when we say swa, right? Swa means I'm offering myself to you, or offering my heart to you, the oblation to the fire. So when you're offering the bhoga to the deity, that's what you're offering the most. Of course, we should make sure the offering is first class. We can't say, okay, because Krishna is taking my bhakti, then even if it's maybe burnt or, you know, not cooked well or like that. No, we should be attentive. Everything should be first class that we offer to Krishna. But if you make the most opulent offering, but your mind is not on the job, if you're not thinking of Krishna, if you're not offering with love to Krishna, then where is the satisfaction for Krishna? So that is the most important thing. So swa means ourselves. So studying the Bhagavatam, it is called swajaya. Swajaya. What does jnana mean? Sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called what? Chapter 6. Dhyana Yoga. What is jnana? No, that's jnana. Like that, jnana. Like that. Jnana Yoga is chapter 4, transcendental knowledge. But then sixth chapter is jnana. What is jnana? Meditation. Yeah, fixing. Meditating. Being introspective. Swajaya, when you study the Shastra, one of the points of studying the Bhagavatam is swajaya. Swajaya means self-study. Swa, the self, jaya, meditating. So as you study the Bhagavatam, you should be meditating on your present condition, on your anattas. These things will become revealed to you. When you study the Bhagavatam, it purifies you. That's why the Bhagavatam itself says, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Right? Seva. And Prabhupada explains in the purport there are two types of Bhagavats. What are the two types of Bhagavats? The devotee and? Has anyone ever read the Bhagavatam? Second chapter, 18th verse, purport, famous purport. Two types of Bhagavats. What are the two types of Bhagavats? The devotee and the book, the Bhagavatam itself. Because what is in the Bhagavatam? The Bhagavatam is full of the examples and the instructions of pure devotees. So the Bhagavatam is Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam. It is full of the Bhagavat, the original Bhagavat, or the greatest person, which is Krishna, and the other Bhagavats, which are Krishna's pure devotees. So it is self-study, because when you read their example, then you see, you can compare yourself to them. So then you purify your heart. That's the point. That's why the Bhagavatam purifies our consciousness. It should purify our consciousness. Hands up if your heart is pure. Hands up if your heart is not completely pure. Okay. So then, if you want to purify your heart, it is said you should study the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nashta prayesh vabhadreshu nicham bhagavata sevaya bhagavat yutama shloke bhaktiya bhavati nashtiki. Abhadrani. Abhadrani means the inauspicious things in your heart. What are the inauspicious things in our heart? What are they called? Anartha. What is artha? Dharma, artha, karma, moksha. What is artha?
Money.
Yeah, it is money, but it's also, there's other things as well. What is artha? Artha means something valuable. Right? Anartha means something invaluable. Something that doesn't have any worth. So what's in our heart? Things that don't have any meaning or worth, and that's what we're attached to. Right? We're attached to things that don't have any meaning or any value or any worth. But we're attached to it. Right? Don't take away my attachment. Don't take away my attachment. Right? Why is the guru being so heavy on me? Why is he trying to take away my attachment? Why is he taking away this anatta? This is my anatta. Right? This one is special. I know all the others are not special. I know all the ones in the other devotees' hearts, I know they're stupid, but this one is important. This is my anatta. I'm going to keep it.
Huh?
You can't touch it. I go before Krishna. You're supposed to go before Krishna like this. But some devotees go before Krishna like this. Right? You can't see what's behind my back. Right? And you can't have it. And what does Lord Nisringadev say? He says, I will take it anyway. And I will rip it apart. Like that. So it will be taken. Krishna will take it. Either you give it voluntarily, or Krishna will take it forcefully. But either way, the anattas will be removed. Either way, Krishna is going to take it. So the part, the purpose, one of the purposes we study the Bhagavatam is because by studying these, the Bhagavatam, we see the examples of the pure devotees. And then we compare our consciousness to the consciousness of the pure devotees. And we see what is their consciousness like. And what is my consciousness like? No? What is Draupadi's consciousness like? Right? There are seven great women in the Vedic scriptures. Does anyone remember who they are? Anyone remember the seven great women? Kunti? Yeah. Who? I can't hear you, so you have to say. Who? Gandhari? Okay, Draupadi, Kunti, Gandhari. Who? That is the wife of Ravan? Yeah, Ravan's wife? Sita? Yeah, Sita. That's four. Who? Devahuti, I'm not sure what she said. Draupadi? Who? I'm not sure. It could be, yeah. It could be. I'm not sure. I actually don't know who the seven are. I've heard it before, but I can't remember. I have heard it, but I can't remember like that. But if you examine those women, right, the reason we study the Bhagavatam, right, the eighth chapter is the prayers of Queen Kunti. Is it eight or ten? Eight is eight, yeah, and ten is Bhishma. Right. So then chapter eight is the prayers of Queen Kunti. So Kunti is here, Draupadi is here, Gandhari is there in the Bhagavatam. So when you study, then you have to compare yourselves to them. Right? If you're a woman and you study them, then you see, what am I like compared to them? Right? And if you're a man, you look at Arjuna, you look at Yudhishthira, you look at Parikshit, what am I like compared to them? Right? This is, it's self-study, and it purifies the heart. If you meditate deeply, swajaya means deep introspection. That is why Prabhupada said 1 or 2 hours a day you have to read his books. Right? I don't do that. I don't read Prabhupada's books 1 or 2 hours a day. But I listen to lectures by my guru probably 1 or 2 hours a day. Most days. Not every day. But most days. Like that. So I'm hearing the Bhagavatam either through my spiritual master, or I do read Prabhupada's book because I teach the Bhagavatam here in the temple. So it means I have to read. That's why I teach. Because if you teach, you have to read. You have to put yourselves in position in your devotional service that you're forced to be purified. Otherwise, we just become influenced by Maya. So you have to put yourselves in positions of responsibility where you have to preach. So then you have to study Prabhupada's books. Otherwise, the tendency after a few years, you lose interest and then you start thinking about other things. So swajaya means that you have to be introspective. When you read Prabhupada's books, you have to read in a very quiet place. You have to go somewhere where you're not going to be distracted. And you just have to absorb yourself. And then you have to introspect and compare yourself and analyze your anattas and see them for what they are. And this purifies the consciousness. That's why the Bhagavatam rids you of anattas. It is a powerful process. So it must be done regularly. We have to regularly read Prabhupada's books. So then you see, you compare yourself to Kunti, you compare yourself to Draupadi, you compare yourself to Gandhari. What was Draupadi like? You see in this chapter, right, what happens? Right? The most difficult thing that could possibly happen to anyone, 5 children are murdered. Right? It's unspeakable. It's unspeakable. Right? So Arjuna goes to get him. Right? He's just about to get him. He goes and gets him, captures him, and brings him back. and puts him down at the feet of Draupadi. And she said, and he says to her, "Now tell me what to do with him, because I'm very happy to kill him right now." Arjuna gets angry and says that his eyes turn like copper, like red. You know, when Arjuna is angry, he doesn't get angry often, because you know he doesn't get intimidated very often. But when he's angry, after Abhimanyu was killed, no one could even look him in the eye. Even the other Kshatriyas couldn't look him in the eye. They couldn't even look at him. That's how powerful Arjuna is. Right? So he's got Ashwatthama there. And you know what Draupadi says? She says, "Don't kill him." Right? I mean, what is that? What sort of a person is that? How great is this devotee? You know, I know what I would do. You know, I'd probably kill the person myself. I wouldn't even wait to ask someone else, "Should we kill him?" I'd just obliterate the person. Right? And Draupadi says, "No, don't kill him. He's the son of our guru." Like that. But Prabhupada's already said in the purport, that doesn't matter. He's a butcher. Right? Just get rid of him. Like that. But she doesn't do that. Right? So this makes us understand what the level of tolerance that we have to come to is. Right? What the level of purity in the heart. What sort of unselfishness. What sort of respect for others, and particularly for brahmanas and gurus and senior personalities, needs to be there in our heart. This is one of the most important features of Vedic culture, is respect for seniors. Right? And who is the senior? Right? Senior is the person who is older than us, we offer them respect. Senior is the person who has been a devotee for longer than us, we offer them respect. Senior is the person who is more advanced than us, we offer them respect. They may not have been a devotee as long, but they're clearly more advanced, we offer them respect. Right? Senior means, according to ashram, right? Then obviously the sannyasis and the brahmacharis, they're on the, and the brahmacharinis, they are on the first level. So they should offer respect to the grihasthas, offer respect to the vanaprasas, offer respect to the sannyasis. That is the system. There's a order there. And in terms of vana, then the shudras, they offer respect to the vaishyas, they offer respect to the kshatriyas, and everyone offers respect to the brahmanas. That is the situation. So Vedic culture, one of the most important features is offering respect. So we see when we study the life of Draupadi, what was she like? And this purifies us. We should also become like that. We should become inspired to become like her. And then another example is Gandhari. What did Gandhari do? Found out she was going to marry a blind king. Her husband would be blind. So what did she do? She got the cloth and she tied her eyes like that. And she never saw again. Hands up if you would do that for your husband. Couldn't even dream it. Veda Priya says she would. Because she's in the temple, you have to say these things. So we say these things, right? But would we actually do it? None of us would do it. None of us would do it. Right? But imagine doing that. Just imagine not being able to see your entire life, because culturally you're not supposed to be superior to your husband. I mean, what a culture, what a magnitude of person. How powerful was she? Right? And then later on, the battle was about to take place. So she said to Duryodhana, her son, she said, "Come before me naked," because she had the blindfold on for years. She said, "Come before me naked, right? And then I'll take off the blindfold, and just by my looking at you, your body will become like iron, right? And therefore, no one will be able to kill you, right?" So he was walking towards his mother's room in the palace, and he only had a gumshoe on. And when he got there, he was going to take the gumshoe off when he was in the room with her. And then Krishna met him on the way and said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to meet my mother, and she's going to lift off and she'll see me naked and I'll become like iron." Krishna said, "You can't stand naked before your mother." He said, "Keep your gumshoe on at least, please." But he said, "Okay, that's true." So he went, and then she lifted up and his body became like iron except for this part. And she said, "Why? I told you to take everything off." And then he said, yeah, but I met Krishna, and Krishna said, I can't be like that in front of you. And she said, you know, like this. And then what happened later on, they were fighting for days. Bhima and Duryodhana were smashing each other with clubs for days. And Bhima, he was more powerful, but he couldn't defeat him because his body was like iron. He just smashed him, but he couldn't defeat him. So then Krishna went. Krishna showed him, like indicated to him. And then Bhima, because you don't hit someone below the belt, right? But then Krishna went like that, and then Bhima only said, okay. And then Bhima got the club and just smash, hit him there, and then broke his thigh, and that's when he went down. Like that. So what was the power of Gandhari? Right? And look at Kunti. Look at her potency as an example in the Bhagavatam. That when her husband died because he was cursed, and then he united with Madhuri in the forest, and then he gave up his body, and then Madhuri, she called out, Kunti, Kunti. Because Kunti would not have let that happen. She protected Pandu. She never let her husband fall down with her, unite with her, because he would die. That's how powerful she was. But Madhuri wasn't as strong. So she united with Pandu, and then Pandu died. And then Kunti went, and they were both, they just lost their husband. So what happens in the Vedic culture when you lose your husband? You perform sati. Right? You enter into the fire. Hands up if you would do that for your husband. No one could even do it in Kali Yuga. This is what the women were like, even 100 years ago. Even 100 years ago, the women were like this. Right? They would enter into the fire. That was cooler than the separation, the fire they were feeling from separation from their husband. We, Kali Yuga, we've lost all these qualities like that. So then Kunti and Madhuri, they both wanted to enter the fire. But Madhuri said to Kunti, she said, I can't look after the children as well as you. Because two of them belong to me, three of them belong to you. I won't bring them up the same. I won't love them all the same. But Kunti, you can love them all the same. So you stay. So imagine what Kunti felt. All she wanted to do was hop on that fire. Right? But Madhuri went onto the fire and she stayed and looked after the boys, the five of them, equally. Loved them all the same. Right? That is greatness. So we have to read the Bhagavatam. We have to understand these things. Right? And one of the main things we have to learn is not to be so selfish. Because we tend to get so caught up in our own little lives, which aren't actually that important. And all the problems we have, which are so big, aren't actually that important. And that's what we hear in the Bhagavatam. Right? They do their duty regardless. Right? They don't say, oh, I've got a headache today, or you know, my little toe hurts, or you know, or that Mataji said something to me yesterday and she really hurt my feelings, I can't do my service today. You know, like that. Or you know, we're just so petty in terms of doing our duty. But in terms of what you hear in the Bhagavatam, they were unstoppable in their duty to Krishna. So we should learn these things and we should become inspired to become better as devotees. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Yeah, so we should at least improve as devotees. Because that's part of humility, dānya. Part of humility means we know that we can't be Yudhishthira, we know that we can't be Arjuna, we know that we can't be Draupadi, like that, but we should aspire to follow in their footsteps and improve ourselves. That's the whole point. So, you know, a mature devotee should be intelligent and they should understand. I mean, obviously, we should not become despondent, we should become inspired. If you're becoming despondent, it means your attitude's not correct. That's the mode of ignorance to become. Despondency is the mode of ignorance. People come to, it's too difficult. No, that's a mode of ignorance. And we should become inspired. And we should become feeling that I want to improve. That should be the point when we hear the Bhagavad Gita. So devotees have to be a little bit intelligent, a little bit mature in their application. It means that you don't, you know, you have to read the Bhagavad Gita and you have to understand the proper mood and how to extract the nectar or the essence from the Bhagavad Gita and improve in our devotional service. So devotees have to become a little bit more mature. So, is that okay? Any other question or comment? I've heard that, yeah, I've heard that he's still living somewhere. Do you remember where he is? Or Ashwatthama?
He's living there.
Where is he?
There.
We're not sure where he is, but he's I've heard that he's still, I've actually heard where he is, but I've forgotten. I can't remember where he is, but I've heard that he's somewhere like that. I'm not sure, I can't remember. Usually they go to the Himalayas. Vyasadeva is still there, like that. Many personalities are still there. Naranarayan Rishi. You have to have the eyes to see them also. Like that. Any other question or comment? Srila Prabhupada ki.